This is MemberCare Media, a media ministry of TWR. Up next, a conversation we believe will be helpful to you. This is a copyright production of MemberCare Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.
If you've listened to this program over the last few weeks, then you've been listening in on some conversations between MemCare's Scott Hollinger and Dr. Stacy Reinhart and Dr. Rick Sessoms of MentorLink International. They've been talking about leadership, servant leadership for one thing, and its implications for the church and for Christian work around the world and its effect on culture. Last week, they expanded that to mentoring and what that means. It has, I think, been interesting. And I'm sure it will be interesting again today. So, Scott, what's next?
Okay, on this edition, we want to look at applying what we've been talking about in our past sessions together. How does a leader begin to transform a culture to embrace the values that you've been sharing with us?
Well, first of all, whenever we ask someone what they think of, what picture comes to their mind when they think of culture, there are lots of images. Culture, I was with one group one time and I asked the question and one guy blurted out, well, our culture is the way we do things around here. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty good response. Culture is has to do with both the written and unwritten rules of how we function together as a collective in society. And of course, culture, and there's a lot of good things to say about culture and there's a lot of bad things to say about culture. And when we talk about culture, there are all kinds of different cultures. There's a national culture, there are ethnic cultures, there are organizational cultures, there are church cultures, there are even family cultures. So when we're talking about an organizational culture, there are some principles and some guidelines that are true of organizational cultures that could be applied to virtually any culture. But cultures are good in the sense that they provide identity for people. They give you some sense of predictability of how life is supposed to work. They provide some security and safety and from the environment outside of the culture. Cultures can be also quite limiting and constrictive if they don't accept any new ideas in, or if the rules are very exclusive to a very small group of people, etc. So when we talk about culture, the reason I said all that is because our intent is not to be critical, but simply to reflect some reality of what's really going on here. Whenever we talk about culture, one of the key issues when you talk about culture is the question of values. In most organizations today, if you walk into their headquarters or wherever they happen to call home, you'll often see on the wall a list of their values. Mm-hmm. The question is, do those values on the wall really reflect the true values that are inherent within that organization's culture? And so what we're wanting to do is first of all, to analyze how can you tell? How can you tell whether the ones that we talk about, in other words, the written values, are consistent with the real ones? Mm-hmm. And is there any difference? In most organizations, there is some gap between the real ones and the written ones. But the way you can tell, there's a number of questions that can be asked. And I'll be brief with this, but one of the questions, for example, is what behavior does the leader reward? In other words, if there are reward systems, and there are reward systems in every organization, from how much you pay people to who you promote to who you spend time with, or there's probably some reward system that are more subtle than that. But in every organization, there are reward systems. So the question is, what kind of behavior gets rewarded? What kind of behavior really gets rewarded? We talk about that one of our values in many Christian organizations is integrity. Well, do we really reward integrity? To say it very bluntly, in many organizations, we tend to value those that either have money or have the capacity to access money, or we reward people who can work the political system, mm-hmm. that are politically expedient. those are the people who tend to be promoted. Those are the people who tend to rise to the top. I mean, that's a very simple, simplistic even example, but you can begin to see how the values that are written on the wall may not be the ones at the end of the day that people understand. Stacy, one of the ways that we can tell is what leaders model and teach. What would you say about that issue?
Well, as you were talking about rewards, I was thinking of Jesus and Peter. And let me just talk a little bit about that, and you'll see that Jesus rewarded and taught and modeled the same consistency, with the same consistency. And I'm thinking of the passage where in Matthew 16, where Jesus came to the 12 and he said, who do people say the Son of Man is? And they said one of the prophets or Elijah or John the Baptist. And of course, those were heroes of the faith for the God-fearing Jews of the day. And then he said, well, who do you say that I am? After probably a long hemming and hawing between them, finally, Peter looked at Jesus in the eyes and he said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now, if the Pharisees had been outside the circle of the disciples watching that and hearing that, they would immediately picked up stones and stoned Peter. They weren't. But Peter obviously went against his self-interest to do that, to respond that way. And then there were some other things that happened in that immediate situation. And then it says, from that point on, a few verses later, Jesus began to tell the disciples he's going to go to Jerusalem and suffer and be crucified and raised up on the third day. And then as soon as Peter heard that, he says, God forbid it, Lord, that will never happen to you. Peter had been blessed and rewarded by Jesus when he denied himself and responded in obedience to the revelation that you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then as soon as Peter said that, Jesus said, get behind me, Satan, for you're not setting your interest on God's interest, but on man's interest. Well, Peter, when he heard that he had been blessed by Jesus, he thought to himself, well, I'm going to be the Messiah's right-hand man in his kingdom. That's what he told me. He said, blessed are you, Simon, and upon this rock I will build, and so on. Well, that's not what Jesus meant at all. Jesus was blessing Peter because of the fact that he denied himself and put response to the revelation ahead of his own self-interest. And we know that because right after Jesus says, get behind me, Satan, you're not setting your interest on God's, but on man's, he said, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. And so Jesus modeled this idea of giving of yourself, of sacrificing. He rewarded it with Peter and even rebuked the opposite of it. And so that's a way a person could get a handle on it from a biblical point of view.
Yeah, excellent example. So what we're seeing is that the way to embed or the way to support the values that are really important within an organizational culture or any culture for that matter is what behavior do we reward? What do the leaders model and teach? Great example from the life of Jesus in both of those counts. I'll mention one last one. There are others, but I'll mention one last one here. How does the leader use the organization's scarce resources? Such an important issue. Now, going back to the life of Jesus, he didn't have a whole lot of resources. There wasn't a whole lot of cash to go around. But Jesus did have the resource of his time and his energy. There was one of him. Mm-hmm. He limited himself to the confines of being human. And so he had a decision to make. How am I going to spend my time and give of myself? He could have chosen to build probably the most significant mega church in history. I have no question that could have happened. The throngs crowded around him because of his amazing communication ability, but he chose to go to the other side of the lake when they wanted to make him king and get free lunch forever. So we see that he chose instead to invest his time and his energy in a few key people, in his disciples, to be sure, into people like Mary and Martha. He chose to invest himself in a few people, and there was no backup plan. He gave himself to these people, and so by investing himself in them, the scarce resources of his own person into them, he entrusted to these people the future of the church. And we can see how the church then adopted those values and therefore became this healthy enterprise that has now continued on into what you and I have been swept into and has now continued for 21 centuries. So we see that Jesus really catalyzed, if you will, the value of the investment in people and the value of what we call mentoring today through how he shared the scarce resources of his own time and energy. So I'd say those are three very key ways that leaders can really embed, if you will, can bring to life within an organization the values that are important, the behavior we reward, the things that we model and teach. Not enough just to talk about them. Mm-hmm. We've got to be living it. Mm-hmm. And whatever we're living, we need to talk about so that people can understand what's going on. And then finally, how do we allocate those scarce resources? I don't know of a Christian organization in the world that feels like they have adequate resources. I know that we don't feel like we do. Right, Stacy?
That's right.
I think that most faith-based organizations feel that they're a little short at the end of the month. And so the question is, how are we going to take those resources that God has entrusted to us and invest them? That's one of the key elements that we hold in our hands to make the difference in terms of the values. It's important for us to realize as leaders that whether we like it or not, whether we're conscious of it or not, the answer to these questions is shaping our organizations as we speak. And this is not a prescription as much as it is a description of how organizational cultures get shaped and reshaped, created and recreated, invigorated and reinvigorated. And so the wise leader will take a look at these, begin to evaluate them very carefully in the light of Jesus' way of leading, and ask himself or herself the question, how can I take these embedding mechanisms, these tools that God has placed in my hand, and begin to help people become their best and perpetuate an organizational culture that's healthy and honoring to God.
Scott Hollinger talking with Dr. Stacy Reinhart and Dr. Rick Sessoms of MentorLink International about leadership and culture and how as leaders we can incorporate the Bible's concepts of leadership into the culture of the organization of which we're a part. Some interesting and challenging thoughts, I think. We have one more installment of this series of conversations, and we'll hear that next week at this time. And I'll give you a small clue. Think of two questions. What's next? And how does servant leadership fit my organization?
This feature is a presentation of MemberCare Media. Thanks for taking the time to listen. We invite you to check out our website further. We offer audio features and resources to help you in your work and daily life. In addition, we have links to other helpful websites that will be an encouragement to you and your family. This is a copyright production of MemberCare Media and may not be reproduced without prior written consent.